bonne fin de campagne et donc au 22 avril.
CKUT's annual funding drive runs Thursday, March 18th to Sunday, March 28th. Our programmers have been working hard at home all year, and it's time to celebrate their efforts. The theme of our first ever online drive is sowing the seeds of grassroots change, and we're asking you to support independent community media. Help us reach our goal of $25,000. Go to CKUT.ca to donate today.
Sowing the seeds of change, seeds of change. Sowing the seeds, sowing the seeds of change, seeds of change. Sowing the seeds of change.
Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, March 25th, 2021. It's our funding drive, and I also have fascinating conversations to share with you as usual. On tonight's show, my guests, Adrienne Richards in Mob at the Centaur.
They are people that want to be there because they are coming to the theater, you know, kind of, you know, still during a pandemic. I'm sure not everyone's going to be vaccinated. I'm sure not everyone's, you know, we're not out of the clear, right? Right? Not out of the clear out. We're not, how am I trying to say? We are not out of the clear yet, right? So to know that these people are coming to the theater, I have a strong feeling it's going to be people that are very excited and want to be there.
Yael Azoulay of La Trame de l'Agence Resonance on the modern jig.
They have one thing in common is that the moment that they found out about jig or they discovered that in their history, they could not let go of it. So it had to become part of their process from that point on. So if they came from a classical ballet training, at the moment they discovered that rhythmical dance, they had to just keep going with it.
And Mariam Zaidi of Silk Road Institute.
I think it's really important to have these conversations continuously. This is a vital moment, but I think all moments are really vital to have conversations around how do we sort of have systems in place to allow newcomers to feel welcome and integrate well into our society.
Tomorrow is the day. Theaters and red zones, including Montreal, finally reopen to live shows and audiences. Of course, it's not a free-for-all. Not every space will be reopening immediately, but I'm getting updates from various theaters with plans to stage live shows. Théâtre Sainte-Catherine will reopen, so will Théâtre La Chapelle. Siegel Center is developing a new work in public for this May, and a lot of work will continue to exist online as it has over the last few months. And of course, distancing and masks are the new norm. The timing is prescient. Venues have been closed since last fall over concerns of the spread of COVID-19. But spring arrived last weekend, World Theater Day is this Saturday, and as I write and record this, it's 21 degrees outside. Things are starting to feel a little more normal, a little more relaxed. At the same time, we must remain vigilant. Most of us will not be getting our vaccines for some time, and there are still a few hundred new COVID cases every day in Montreal. Still, this reopening is something to celebrate. If you want to check the pulse of the English theater community at this time, check out the conference being held right now by the Quebec Drama Federation. We learned about this a few weeks ago. Visit quebecdrama.org for more info. And something else that is mega important, CKUT's funding drive. It wraps up on Sunday, so you have a few days to visit CKUT.ca and make a donation to the station. Sowing the seeds of grassroots change is our theme for 2021. $25,000 is our goal. As it stands, we are a little over halfway there, just over $17,000. Can you help us to the finishing line? Not only do you feel good, but you get goodies as well. The big ask is $30 for 30 seeds of change, but you can contribute however much you want. $30 does net you a fancy 2021 funding t-shirt. One of the designs by Alexa Hawksworth depicts a gardener sowing said seeds, and I haven't decided which one I'm getting yet, but I do like her sun pattern a lot. The station is a nonprofit campus community radio station and is largely powered by volunteers like myself. But of course, CKUT still requires dollars and cents to literally keep the lights on, from rent and utilities to buying and upgrading equipment, renting our broadcast tower, the salaries of our small and dedicated staff. Your donation is also a support for this show. Upstage is one of the few outlets in Montreal completely focused on English language theater, including big productions and indie shows, community and student theater, comedy, experimental works, of course, as well as Francophone productions. Upstage is a home for local theater. The goal is to promote and support the work of local artists and to keep you, the listener, in the loop with new productions and conversations. And CKUT provides a home for that. Now, if you donate, there's a lot of goodies in the draw. Gift cards to vegan restos like Lola Rosa and Au Vivre. We've got gift cards to La Banquise, Paragraph Books, a book bundle from John and Quarterly, and so much more. You can also choose to donate like I do and chip in a bit every month. A little goes a long way. Three ways to donate: call 514-448-4013, visit ckut.ca, and by mail, Radio CKUT 3647, Rue University, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. I hope you can be part of our funding drive this year. Now on to tonight's conversations. When the thriller play titled Mob launched last February at Centaur, demand was so high that the run was already extended early on. Then the pandemic set in and the show was abruptly cut off. Francophone actress and writer Catherine Anne Toupin had starred and developed this hit show first in French as Le Meute. Mob was its English language premiere, a very exciting production to see at Centaur. Toupin's heroine, Sophie, has just gone through the ringer, mysteriously let go from her job as a video game designer, drinking way too much. She ends up at a cozy B&B in the countryside, where she hopes to rest and recuperate, plan her next steps, and maybe also seek revenge? Adrienne Richards was cast as Sophie, and she gets to reprise this role tomorrow night as the show is back on, a fitting way to close out this run. I saw the original production. I had a heck of a time seeing it. It's fantastic lighting, fantastic performances, and I'm so glad that it reopens the theater world here in the city. Adrienne Richards spoke with me earlier this week. Camaraderie kept coming up with references to her co-stars, Matthew Cabway and Suzanne Bain, who play the nephew and aunt who take in her character. The cast has grown even closer in lockdown. And just one note, all the tickets are sold out for this limited run, but who knows, maybe another extension is in sight. Here is my chat with Adrienne Richards. Welcome, Adrienne, to Upstage. How are you doing?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. It's so wonderful to have you here. We much appreciate it. So this is wild. Could you have seen yourself a year ago once the show closed? Could you imagine being here a year later getting ready to reopen Mob?
You know what? Yes and no. Yes, I could imagine that we would do it again and whenever the pandemic was over, but I don't think, as many of us didn't think, it would be a year later, almost exactly to the date. You know, when it first hit, right? It's kind of like, oh, a couple weeks, everyone just kind of be on lockdown. And, you know, so no, in that sense, it's not lost on me that it is literally the last thing I did before we, you know, went into lockdown. And then like the first thing I'm doing out into the world again, almost the same week to the day.
Wow.
Pretty surreal.
Wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's going through your mind as you kind of revisit this role at, like, I know it hasn't, it's been a full year. I'm sure the character didn't just, you know, leave you in mid-March of 2020. But to step back into it now officially, like, what kind of thoughts are you having?
That's a great question. It's funny because for a while there, I had a feeling, you know, Susan and Matt and I would FaceTime each other every once in a while, check in on each other. And there was a while there where I thought at some point we're going to go back into it and it's all going to be right there. Like I had this feeling that it was just going to be like we could step on stage and say every line. And then, of course, as the year went on, other things start happening and you know, you kind of get busy doing other things. And so when we came back to it, to be honest, I wasn't ready to do it. I didn't think this show was what we needed at the time when they asked us to do it, because it's so intense. And, you know, you kind of feel like everyone's really precious right now and you need to, like, let's do, you know, I don't know, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers or something, you know, you kind of like feel like, but it's interesting now that we've been back into rehearsal, and I always have this with Sophia. I always have this, like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it, which is totally the character's thoughts. I mean, she doesn't want to do it. So it's kind of, I feel that little thought of like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. If like I'm being dragged into this, it's like, well, guess what? One of my lines is literally like, I was dragged into this. So I do feel like, now it's really exciting. I actually feel in this moment right now, even more excited to do it, because it's, I feel like it's in me in a totally different way, in a deeper way, in a truer way. And so, yeah, I'm actually really excited to play, because even the other day we did a run through and Matt and I were having so much fun. Mm-hmm. And I had this moment of like, oh wow, we don't need the audience to do this show. because there's that moment when you're first doing it last year where it's like, we just want to get the audience, you know, like, what's that feel like, you know? But now we're enjoying it so much, the three of us, that it'll be just a gift to have an audience, you know, because we're just enjoying it already. So it's been quite a journey from, you know, 3 weeks ago to like, we're not going to do this, right? To now going, no, I think it is still the time for this show. It is still very important because people have been at home, you know, and online more. It's probably even more important than it was last year. So it's been quite a journey. I've definitely done my human revolution in the last 3 weeks. Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds like when you're in a cast, right, you become really close knit just by virtue of the fact of the long hours and the pressure, and but also the fun times, right, of putting together a piece. So it sounds like you guys, even though things were put on hiatus, like you still maintain that strong bond. You said you were still texting each other like after the show went dark.
That's right. Yeah, the three of us really bonded. I mean, we were cast together almost 3 years ago now. So we've...
Oh, wow.
And in my callback, I mean, it's one of those scripts, right? You read it and you're like, this, it has to be the right people. I mean, it just has to be, especially myself and Matt, it really has to be the right guy for me to do this, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I was living in LA for a long time. And when I came back, I met him really briefly at I think it was a McDonald's or Verizon, one of those big commercial auditions. And we were set up as husband and wife. And just his little comments to me were really funny. And he kind of caught me off guard and I was laughing. I was like, oh, I like this guy, you know? And then I think it was like a week later, you know, I've never met him before in my life. A week later, we see each other at the callback for Mob. And I immediately was like, are you going back in right now? Because he was coming out of, you know, reading with someone else. I was like, are you going back in? And he's like, I was like, oh, it's on. And so then we just had such an amazing callback together that, and at that point too, I didn't realize there was humor in the show. I was a bit, you know, because I was just kind of reading it from Sophie's perspective. But when we got on stage together, Ida and Andrew were laughing. And I was like, oh, is this show funny? Like, are we funny? You know? And so I knew that. I said to my husband, I came home that day. I was like, you know what? If it's Matt, I could do it. Like that could be super fun. And so then when we got it and we're like, you know, who got it? You know, and it was Matt. We were just so excited. So from the beginning, even though we barely knew each other, from the beginning, we were just like, okay, you know, and this show too, specifically, you have to have so much trust for each other. Yeah. And all three of us. So that we just bonded right away. And so it's been like almost 3 years of this deep bond. And yeah, like during COVID, I mean, especially in the beginning, we would have three-way FaceTime calls to make sure everyone was healthy, how they were doing, you know, Matt's living alone, how are you doing, Matt, you know, just checking in with each other. And then, you know, as time went on, it would be, you know, spread out, but we would still check in and see how each other's doing. And yeah, so once we jumped back in, it was just like no time. I mean, it really was such a surreal moment of like literally almost to the day jumping back in and going, what a time warp. Like, what, you know, here we are again, you know.
And when did you get the notice that you would be back into rehearsals? Because I think that call came before the call that you'd actually be on stage in front of a paying audience.
That's right. So we got the call in the fall.
Okay.
Saying, this is the show we want to open with once this is done. Yeah. You know, how do you feel? And that was like October, November. It's like, I don't know how I feel next week. You know, like,
right.
let alone next March, you know, and it was just kind of like, well, just seeing if that would interest you guys, you know. So they guaranteed us that we'd be safe and that the audience would be safe and that if all that could happen, you know, would we be interested? So it was like, yeah, for sure. So we come back to, you know, we cut to now, I think it was February, and they said, all right, we're going. It's like, what? It's like in that thing too, right? Where you're not really out in the world yet. And it's, you know, we're isolated. We're not seeing our parents, you know, we're making sure everyone's safe and, you know, really trying to keep the virus out of our house. And, you know, and then it's like, yeah, you're going to go to the theater. It's like that, you know, of all shows, you know, to go to be your first gig back in the world. It was quite a shock. So we knew, yeah, I think, I guess it was maybe a month before, because we started slowly. I had an instinct, like, start learning your lines again, you know?
Oh, really?
And okay. Yeah, I had that feeling of like, I should probably start looking at my script again. And then we got the call. And so the three of us were like, all right, let's check in with each other. And then maybe we can run our lines on Zoom. And so I worked on them a bit and I could not get them in, like the scenes.
Even though you had, you know, gotten them down pat in last year.
That it was like, it didn't resonate. It was like, I couldn't grasp that we were really going to do it. I couldn't grasp the stakes of it. It was very strange. And so finally I was just like, guys, can we just do some Zoom? I just need to hear your voices. And that was interesting. As soon as we heard each other's voices, it was like, oh yeah. Oh yeah. And my monologues too. My monologues were there, which is interesting. My monologues were there and they're full of, you know, all kinds of juicy, fun stuff, but they were there. But the scene work, I just couldn't do it on my own. Once I heard their voices, it all was like,
it came back to you.
Yeah. You'd have a moment where you'd like, I want to say this. Is that it? And you look down the script. Yep. That's it. You know? So that was super helpful. So we, you know, we kind of supported each other that way too, before we started rehearsals.
Speaking with Adrienne Richards, who plays the role of Sophie in Mob on stage as of this weekend, this Friday. It's kind of momentous to be a part of this because you're kind of a little bit a part of the English relaunch when it comes to theater in Montreal. There have been productions, we know, in outside and online throughout this past year, but Centaur is really kind of leading the pack here. No pressure.
Yeah.
Does the cast feel any kind of momentousness with that?
I mean, Susan mentioned that the other day. She's like, you guys, you know, we're the first, you know, show going up, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that it is quite, I think the thing that we're all still kind of blown away by is that it is literally almost to the year that we closed the show because of COVID. So that really keeps blowing us away that it's, yeah, that it's just this year hiatus with the global pandemic in between, you know, the last show to this show. But yeah, we are aware of like, wow, this is the first. And I think too, because of our rehearsal process, every other day, we didn't know whether we were doing it. Every other day was like, we're going to get an announcement this week. Oh, just kidding. Oh, we're going to get an announcement tonight. Oh, actually, he gave an announcement. Oh, so we were constantly kind of in this place of just keep going, just keep learning, just keep going, you know, and whether this is for us to solidify the show now so that in the fall we do it, or whether this is to just solidify it now to play and get back in the world, we didn't know. So it was very, we had each other for that. And we, you know, we could support each other through that, the difficulty of that not knowing and just enjoying that not knowing. And
it's almost an act of optimism.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do feel like the work we did in the last 2 weeks was so deep and profound with Andrew that I trusted that, well, if it's not going up now, like if it's not, you know, if that's not happening, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be ready when we are going to open, you know, nothing's wasted.
Adrienne, you mentioned, you know, how it was hard for the lines to stick, even though you had learned them a year before. Yeah. But you're also playing this character who is steeled, like kind of like has a very determined approach to, she's very determined in her goal. She's very raw. As you mentioned, there is some humor there. So coming back to it a year later, as an actor, has the role quickened at all? Do you feel anything different about coming back to Sophie?
Absolutely. I feel, I feel like I'm finally telling her story. It's one of those things we want to ask everyone to come back, right? Everyone that came back to saw the show last March, can you guys come back? It feels like I'm finally rooted into her journey. I think last year I was so, there was a real mix of Adrienne's hesitancy to play this role and my own, what I was overcoming as an actor to play this role and what the character was going through. There was a lot of that heightened stakes, you know, and now because of COVID and because of what we've all been through in the last year, I've settled into this place of, which I think was also why it was hard to learn those lines, because she is in such a like place. But now, you know, Andrew gave us the permission to just be where we are. And so because of that, I've been able to sit in this character so much more so than last year and to go on the journey even more so. And it feels more powerful. I feel more powerful this year than last year. I think last year was kind of like a, we did it kind of feeling, like, oh my God, the show, you know? And this year feels more like, yeah, here's this story. You know, there's like a settled feeling, you know. It's like how many times do you get a chance to do a show again a year later, and we've all changed and we've all settled into them so much more. We've carried them for a year because we all kind of knew, right, at some point we're probably going to do it again. So it's not like you can just say goodbye to them and, oh, who's that character again? It's like, no, you're kind of living with it somewhere, you know, within you. So yeah, it feels amazing to do it again and to really own it. The example I gave to the cast is like, I feel like last year I played her at the beginning of her journey in the heightened kind of place of all of her feelings and everything. And now I'm playing where she should be, I think, anyway, at least where I think, you know, Catherine Anne wrote it, is in the, like, and she's spoken about this, you know, a woman with nothing to lose. That place, I feel like I've turned over into that place now, and that place.
I want to ask you about that because I find it, number one, very tricky to talk about Sophie because I've spoken with Catherine Anne and there's so many twists and turns in the play that you just don't want to give anything away.
I know. It's hard to talk about. I keep catching myself. I'm like, oh, don't want to say that.
But as you say, she's a woman who's extremely focused on her goal. And one that I had was that maybe this audience, after, you know, even if you kept your job and everyone's safe and healthy, and your life is pretty normal, even despite everything, everyone has been through some upheaval this year. People, do you think the audience are going to relate to your character more because they've come from a place where there's nothing left to lose, where so much has been changed? And I think it's kind of similar to what Sophie kind of goes through, where she's lost her position. There's some, we're learning about the circumstances that led to her life getting turned upside down.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, we say like, wow, I mean, this audience really wants to come. Like, even though we're going to have less people there, they are people that want to be there because they are coming to the theater, you know, kind of, you know, still during a pandemic. I'm sure not everyone's going to be vaccinated. I'm sure not everyone's, you know, we're not out of the clear, right? Right. Not out of the clear out. We're not, how am I trying to say? We are not out of the clear yet. Right. So to know that these people are coming to the theater, I have a strong feeling it's going to be people that are very excited and want to be there. You know what I mean? So, but I agree. I think you're right. I think, they will have maybe a little bit more to relate to my character. I mean, my first line is really let's try to see this as an opportunity. I mean, that's like, that's the first thing I say to the audience. I think it's kind of, you know, it is, this is not, sorry, this big large bus going by. It is an opportunity, you know, let's, you know, hopefully people have used this last year as an opportunity to go deeper in their life, to realize what's really important, to, you know, so yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but I'm sure we'll have to ask them at the end of the show.
Will you get that opportunity with the new regulations that are kind of in place? Is there any kind of, because there's always a chance
after
the show, people wait, they're excited to see the performers come out. That may not be there.
Yeah, I think it'll probably have to be like if people email us or if people call us or tell us what they thought, or maybe Ida will get some feedback or, yeah, no, I don't think we haven't talked about that yet, but I have a strong feeling we're going to have to wait upstairs until everyone leaves.
Yeah.
And then we'll be left out. I'm not sure, but yeah, for sure there's not going to be the mingling and hugging and kissing and all that good stuff after the show, right?
And I think everyone will have their mask on as well during the show.
That's right. which I'm kind of glad, you know, the last show we had some people in the audience with masks on.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and it was quite strange at the time because it was like, oh, it's getting closer, right? It's this virus is getting closer. So at least we kind of had that prep to now know everyone's going to be wearing a mask this year. Yeah, it's going to be wild. It's going to be wild too, not being able to see everyone's faces in the audience. I think that's also kind of a...
In this show, could you, with the lighting as is, were you able to see some of the audience? Because I think it kind of depends on where you are, right? And the lighting.
Well, I look out into the audience quite a bit in my monologue, so I get a chance to see people. Yeah.
Will that be intimidating for you to not see actual faces? Or is that you're just kind of steeling yourself to like, that's what it is?
I mean, I think that at least the most important thing is people's eyes. And so definitely I'll be able to see, and I'm sure we'll be able to feel everyone too. It's funny because at first we were saying, wow, it's going to be weird to not be sold out or not sold out, but it's going to be weird to not have a full house.
Yeah.
But the other day we did a run through where we just added Ida. We added Ida and we added the, archival video woman, two people added into the theater, and you could feel there were two people there. Like we were so used to, and so you're so used to this hyper awareness of people around you that we could feel two people in the audience. So it was like, we're going to be able to feel those 30, 36, you know, even though it's not the whatever 237 that could be. So I think it's going to be quite fascinating and probably really special. We're all in this experience together, you know?
Adrienne, thank you so much for joining Upstage to tell us about this very unique experience you're about to embark on this weekend.
You are so welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That was Adrienne Richards, who stars as Sophie in Catherine Anne Toupin's Mob, the translation of her work La Meute. Starts Friday at the Centaur. Tickets have sold out, but if you would like more information, visit centaurtheater.com. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. It's our funding drive, and we are just over halfway to our goal of $25,000. If you select Upstage as the show you are contributing to, you help us reach our individual show goal as well. Donors who commit $30 get a free t-shirt and other goodies. Call 514-448-4013. Visit CKUT.ca or mail us, Radio CKUT, 3647 University, Montreal, Quebec, H3A 2B3. Still to come, Canada's first Muslim theater company gets down to business. I just learned about a brand new dance movement this week, and I'm very excited to tell you about it. The jig, or jig as it's pronounced in French, is the latest evolution of a style of stepping that has taken root in Quebec over the past few centuries. Think of Irish or Gaelic stepping, and you have an idea of its roots. In 2005, a new group formed to support and share the contemporary jig movement in Quebec. It's called Bigico, spelled B-I-G-I-C-O. Their latest venture shares four new choreographies to audiences at home. I learned more about this fascinating movement with my guest, Yael Azoulay. She is working on this production for a multidisciplinary arts agency first launched back in 2016, called La Trame de l'Agence Resonance. Yael manages the dance department at La Trame, and she's also a stepper and choreographer herself. Yael Azoulay spoke with me earlier this week. Welcome, Yael, to Upstage. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you.
How would you define a jig? What kind of dance are we talking about here?
So jig is it's a percussive traditional dance. So it really is all about rhythm. It's usually we can just say it's very, very quick, rapid steps with the feet, where you use your heels, your toes, your points, everything to create rhythm on music. It's traditional form of dance, and it comes from the British Islands, and the immigration of British island people here in the 19th century brought us that sort of dance, that form of dance that we after gradually transformed into the Quebec step dancing. So yeah.
And when we say contemporary jig movement, how old is that and what does it consist of?
So all the time, I suppose dancers want to try to you know, push borders and try to do something different, new. And but with the Bijiko, the contemporary jig movement, we sort of, it started around the end of the of like 1999, 1998, in those years that the movement became stronger and that an event was created called the Biennale de Jig Contemporaine, which that's how Bijiko was created. And then that's how a lot of creators, choreographers started emerging and trying to take step dancing, the traditional form of it, and completely deconstruct it or putting like a completely different approach. Could be of changing the shoe, changing the music, of course, but also changing the shape of what it looks like and what it sounds like. So that's how it sort of grew. And since then, a lot of dancers and choreographers have been part of that movement.
This is so fascinating to hear because I'm learning all about this with you. I had no idea that there was this contemporary push for it, and it's relatively recent as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that also kind of telling stories in a different way is part of that. And glancing through the four pieces that are part of the Bijiko event, we're talking about there's a spaceship, someone's playing the pizuki. We've got a story about a couple. I suppose advancing different kinds of stories is also part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. It really depends of the creative process of each choreographer, as you mentioned. So some will be more on the dramaturgical side of it, more dramaturgy. So trying to, like you said, sci-fi step dancing, for example, that could be a concept. But it really depends on how the choreographer wants to approach it. Because so Jonathan Rousseau is one of their choreographers as well, but he works with improvisation. But it's a more traditional approach to step dancing, and he works with a musician. But his thing is to really try to push forward a technique to sort of create a concept where you can improvise, but within certain parameters. So it's really interesting, and it's more traditional of an approach. It's less on like the theatrical side, but it's still contemporary, right? So it's like, it really depends on how the choreographer wants to go with it.
Right, it's loose. There's no rules necessarily.
Oh, absolutely not. That's the one rule that there isn't any rules, I would say, honestly. Yeah.
So speaking of the particular artists that we see over the course of the Bijiko virtual evening, does everyone have the same kind of background, or are these artists coming from different styles or disciplines of dance?
I would say it's very various. It's various backgrounds. Some come from a folk dance background. Some will come from a contemporary dance background. Some come from a ballet, classical ballet training as well. So it really depends on the choreographer or the dancer. It's that's what makes this movement also so diverse and so interesting. It's the plurality, like the how different everybody is. But for sure, they have one thing in common, is that the moment that they found out about jig, or they discovered that in their history, they could not let go of it. So it had to become part of their process from that point on. So if they came from a classical ballet training, at the moment they discovered that rhythmical dance, they had to just keep going with it and sort of put the two together or blend the two together. So you can really see that in the different pieces.
I think anybody at Yale who has, you know, seen Stomp or just heard a busker drumming on the street, if you don't have a lot of experience with folk dancing or stepping, you can understand the rhythmic draw, right? For dancers like this who end up coming from ballet or stepping, like, what do you think it is that hooks them on the esprit, the spirit of the jig?
Well, one thing that comes that's very often said is actually the social aspect of it, because a lot of dances that you train for professionally, it's a very solitary like approach, right? Yes, you are maybe doing a choreography where there are other people, but the like fun and social element might not be as important than with folk or traditional dancing, where it's really all about the connection with others. It's about fun. It's about, you know, really, really being all together and creating something together. So that's very often something that's that's very appealing. And the other thing, like you mentioned, the rhythm, of course, like it's part of who we are. Rhythm is part of almost all cultures in the world have some form of rhythm in their music or their dance. So it's something that naturally human beings are drawn to. So the intricate movement with the feet, creating rhythm and connecting with the music, it's super fun.
I guess it's funny because we're talking about how this has taken a contemporary turn, how things have developed recently and wanting to kind of, as you said, the one rule is there is no rules, but it still harkens back to that very ancient, a very present desire to connect with people, to be around people.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It is. It's being around people, with people, and for people as well, I would say. Yeah.
Speaking with Yael Azoulay, who is the agent for the Evening of Contemporary Jig that is coming to you virtually, presented by Bijiko. Yael, you're also a step dancer yourself. Have you done jigs before, or jig dancing?
Oh, yeah, of course, absolutely. So jig is basically a synonym to step dancing. So it's in French, we call it jig. So basically, I was saying, it comes from the British Islands, the Irish mostly, that brought us this. So we would call it in English step dancing, which is the word that stayed in the rest of Canada. In Quebec, it was like Francicized, or it became in French jig. But we kept calling the dancers that would do jig stepper, so people that would step. So so jig is in French, and we sort of just translated it in English into jig to keep that rhythm. I think it's a very rhythmical word. I really like that word, that jig word jig.
I always have an ear out for words that have crossed over from French to English, like how in English will say je ne sais quoi, you know, and everyone knows what that means. But to hear that jig, you know, made the jump to French ages ago and has its own ring to it, that is so fascinating to hear. All these like cultures coming together. So we have four different pieces that are part of the virtual evening. We touched a little bit about the spaceship. Now that's in reference to Luc Fleury's piece Espace. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it's two dancers, Olivier Arsenault, Antoine Turmin, who are exactly doing that. It's like they're coming out of a spaceship, landing on this foreign sci-fi land universe, and then they're discovering sound. They're also working a lot. Luc likes to challenge the dancer, because of course, to be able to step dance or to jig, you have to be in a vertical position, right? A posture that your feet are on the ground, obviously. But the more you bend that angle to get more horizontal, the harder it gets to produce and create sound. So a lot of Luc's work is about challenging that notion and then becoming more on the ground horizontally and still trying to capture some of the sounds and some of the energy of of the step dancing. So they do that a lot, and they deconstruct the jig. So sometimes you'll hear a lot of it, sometimes just a little bit. And it's kind of it comes and goes in the piece, all in a very sci-fi ambience, I would say. Yeah.
Oh, it's spacey. I love it. Okay. Le Coeur. Ferrière, the choreographer and also the dancer for this piece.
Yes, absolutely. So Sandrine actually puts a cardio fréquence mètre. It's like a device that she will attach to her body that will capture her heartbeat. And then she will dance on the soundtrack of her own heartbeat. So very often to dance, any rhythmical dance, you're going to need a metronome. You're going to need something outside, external of you, to be able to be on the rhythm. She decided to go into a metronome, an internal metronome, the one we all have, which is the heart, and to dance on her own internal metronome, the heartbeat. So that's what she does. And she challenges herself, obviously, because she wants her heartbeat to vary, so to get faster and then to slow down. So she'll push herself to the limits of physical ability. And she'll really, really like, you know, it's almost like boxing and throwing herself on the ground and doing a lot of things just to make sure, just to make her heartbeat rise. And then it's really this solitary dance where it's a solo girl trying to push her limits.
I'm exhausted just hearing.
Yeah, I know.
So the audience is hearing her heartbeat at the same time.
Yes, you hear the entire show, you hear the heartbeat. Yeah, in a beautiful soundtrack. Yeah.
S'accorder, Jonathan C. Rousseau is the choreographer, also performing with Terry Clouet. This is the bouzouki.
Yeah, so basically that's what I was talking about previously, where he and Thierry together have this language that they develop together to improvise, to be able to improvise. So Jonathan will be doing signs to Thierry to tell him, for example, to accelerate, decelerate, to change the tempo, to change the rhythmical form. So he gives him signals and tells him a little bit what to do, but never knowing exactly what's going to come out. So it's a completely improvised piece from beginning to end. And that's what's really impressive about it. Jonathan is a very technical dancer. He's very virtuoso. So it's really amazing to watch, to see how he can adapt and change what he does according to how the music changes.
When you have to really know your stuff in order to be able to improvise, right? That's kind of the
absolutely thing. But it's also really, really part and very deeply rooted in the tradition of step dancing. It is an improvised form to begin with. It is not a choreographed form. It's meant to be improvised in, you know, jam sessions with the fiddler, with the musician. The Irish bouzouki that Thierry is playing is an Irish bouzouki, actually. It's very common right now in traditional music from Ireland at this moment, but it could be a fiddle, it could have been any other instrument, but it's the connection between the dancer and musician. It's actually deeply rooted in the tradition of step dancing. It's just, so that's why it's maybe the most traditional approach out of all the four pieces that you can see in the night, in the evening. But it's also because of the improvised, because he actually uses a technique that's called sound painting. And so that was invented by someone that I can't recall the name right now, but he uses that technique and he adapts it to his practice.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. And on a romantic note, L and L is two performers together incarnating a couple. I'm not sure if they're a couple in real life.
They are, yeah. Okay. Which allows them to be in the same bubble and therefore dance really together with physical contact even throughout this pandemic.
Oh, wow.
So that's great. And so the story is really a day in the life of these two people, this couple. And so you really follow them like when they wake up, and then, you know, they'll go through a lot of things during the day, and then they'll go to sleep. And then it's like a cycle that will start over again. You will understand basically in the piece at the end that we're looking at a cycle, and everybody can relate to some parts of this piece, of course, in their own personal lives. And so that's what it's very attaching. They also have, so he comes, Vincent Nicolas Provencher comes from a contemporary dance contact improv background. Mélisandre Tremblay-Bourassa comes from a classical ballet training. And so these two universes sort of collide, and it creates a really nice piece with a lot of work of, how do you say this in English? Du travail de portée. So it's like two people together connecting and really playing with the weight. And so it's a very, very interesting approach, and it's a duet. It's really a duet.
Gael, this, you also took the time with the filming, right? This doesn't feel like just one camera propped up watching the dancers, right? This, the time was took in order to get to capture a real cinematic experience.
Yes, that was really important to us. It was actually the base to everything. We worked with Goba Studio, Nicolas Gouin, the filmmaker, to capture all these pieces, and they're all different. And so we have a lot of Steadicam going around the dancer, so you can really feel this proximity. We wanted to offer the spectator like a different experience than if they were in a, you know, watching it live. So we're actually sort of telling you what to watch and how to look, of course, because we're imposing, you know, the editing, but that's what we wanted to do. We wanted you to get close to the dancers, really close to it. And I think it really works well. It pays tribute to the dancers as well, because you see them work, you see their faces, you see their bodies, you know, the way that they really have to work so hard to perform this very hard form of dance. So it was super important for us to do this so that people could live something different, and it would be complementary to the live shows that we also offer usually.
And I'm sure you're winning fans because being online, anybody can check it out. The venues are, it's so funny that arts venues are just about to reopen, but at the same time, you know, people aren't necessarily going to be rushing into theaters. There's not enough tickets for everybody, but it's so wonderful that we still have experiences like this that are online that you can take in from anywhere in the province, anywhere in the world. And I can tell just seeing one of these out of four of the of the choreographies will be enough to get you up on your feet and give you this real sense of joie de vivre.
I think it's one of the really nice things of the virtual events is that there are no more frontiers. There is no more barriers. There were some people that didn't have access to venues as well before. So I think it's sort of a democracy here that we're creating. And I think it's a model that we're going to have to think about moving forward, thinking about hybrid, you know, things where you always have maybe an online possibility for those who can't actually go to venues for different reasons, whether there's social, economical reasons or physical reasons or whatever it is. I think it's great that all this content has been made available in the past year, and we should think about that moving forward.
Yael, thank you so much for taking the time to tell me and my listeners all about this this contemporary spin on Jig. It's been really wonderful.
Well, thanks to you, and I hope people will come and watch it. It's on La Trame. It's an online platform meant to support all those niche artists. So if you want to check it out, there are still four shows on the virtual tour planned.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That was Yael Azoulay of La Trame de l'Agence Résonance. You're hearing music from Espace, one of four pieces in this tour. This piece was choreographed by Luc Fleury, and Olivier Arsenault and Antoine Tourmin are the performers. There are 4 dates left to catch that performance and 3 others as part of the evening of virtual contemporary Jig presented by Bijiko. Next is this Friday, March 26th, followed by March 31st, April 7th, and finally April 15th. Tickets are free, but please reserve your spot. latrame-resonance.com/spectacle. You can also visit Bijiko, spelled Bijiko.ca. I'm Sarah De A, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. It is our funding drive. We are just over halfway to our goal of $25,000 to support the station and the diverse grassroots programming it highlights. If you select Upstage as the show you are contributing to, you help us reach our individual show goal as well. Donors who commit $30 get a free t-shirt as well as other goodies. You can call 514-448-4013 or visit ckut.ca to donate, and you can also check out our t-shirts there as well as the other prizes in our draw. Did you know that we have a Muslim theater company in Canada? It's called the Silk Road Institute, dedicated to fostering contributions from and representation of Muslim voices. It also promotes cross-cultural dialogue. Their first production was held at the Centaur, then in Toronto, and they have a table read coming to Vancouver this summer. This weekend, they are presenting a fascinating conversation around immigration to Canada, the challenges that newcomers encounter, as well as achievements in regards to support and services in recent years. It's called Newcomer Experiences, A Canadian Perspective, and it kicks off this Saturday at 10 o'clock. Mariam Zaidi is Programs and Development Manager at the Silk Road Institute. We spoke earlier this week about their forum and their upcoming theatrical offerings. Welcome to Upstage, Mariam. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
So, Newcomer Experiences, A Canadian Perspective. It's not often that theater companies put together forums to generate conversations, to educate people. The one-off panel from time to time, or the regular talk that's associated with a play is pretty much the norm. But this is a 2-day extravaganza. Tell me about the main goal of Newcomers Experiences.
Absolutely. So I'll start with telling you a bit about the main goal of Silk Road Institute, which is the organization hosting the event. So we are a Montreal-based arts organization. We're dedicated to creating and promoting artistic and cultural programming that strengthens dialogue and the visibility of Muslim representation and Muslim artists across Canada. And so on that, in line with our mandate, we were really fortunate to receive some funding from Heritage Canada to host a series of events that sort of talk to ideas around anti-racism. And so our sort of proposal was to host this event on newcomers in Canada, because you know, a lot of the artists that we represent, that come through the Silk Road are often, you know, our newcomers have been here for a while, but are newcomers to Canada. And as well, we actually will be hosting a table read of a play. So that is the artistic element of this event. The table read will be in June of this year, and it'll be happening as part of the Up in the Air Theatre Revolver Festival. So it's presenting in partnership with Silk Road Institute and Playwrights Theatre Canada. And the play itself is about the immigrant frontline workers who form the backbone of Vancouver's refugee settlement sector. So that sort of closes the event. It's a little bit later on, but we're sort of opening this weekend with these conversations that are really important.
Now, Silk Road Institute is still a relatively recent player on the Canadian theatre scene. There was a performance back in 2018, Domestic Crusaders, and then another show back in 2019, pre-pandemic. So connecting this with the upcoming show, The Frontliners, that's a third production, I guess, in total that the Institute has worked on?
That's correct. And we actually had another table read in the fall when we weren't able to hold an in-person event then. And we're actually in, sort of developing another one for the new year. We're obviously not able to hold in-person events this year. So there's this one in June, and then there's another one that's sort of being commissioned by Silk Road Institute, which will be held early next year. So stay tuned for those details. We're really excited about that one as well. But yeah, we're a relatively new organization. We are, you know, Canada's first professional Muslim theatre arts organization. So we're really proud of that and proud of our work.
There's a lot of different angles that you're going to try to cover in the upcoming forum, two-day forum, because you've got people talking from different sectors. Can you tell me about some of the challenges that you want to tackle in terms of newcomers to Canada?
Absolutely. So we're really, really fortunate to have people from very many different backgrounds and experiences, both professional and personal. So the panels will touch on the histories of migration in Canada over, you know, the past few decades. What does that look like in terms of policy and, different organizations and players that have sort of made the settlement possible for people? We'll be taking a look at access to services and support. So specifically for different communities, what that has looked like and where the changes could be there. And we'll also, you know, because we're an arts organization, we'll also be looking at the integration into the arts for newcomers. How have newcomers been able to access the arts and grow as artists? And so, you know, the forum starts with a keynote address by Yasser Naqvi, who is the CEO of the Institute for Canadian Citizenship and former Attorney General of Ontario, and it closes with a musical performance. So there's quite a lot to experience and quite a variety of perspectives to kind of hear from. And I think what's really important right now is, you know, there's been certain communities in Canada that have received, and it's been ongoing. It isn't very much a new topic or new phenomenon, but have received a lot of, hateful demonstrations and just a lot of attack, whether it's, physical or otherwise. And so I think it's really important to have these conversations continuously. This is a vital moment, but I think all moments are really vital to have conversations around how do we sort of have systems in place to allow newcomers to feel welcome and integrate well into our society.
Well said. I think especially in Quebec, where we have our own system of immigration and, you know, points, right, assigned to different things about each person, like different levels of education are worth different points. Myself as a journalist would get less points than, say, an engineer or someone who's a doctor or a specialist in the sciences. Do we see a lot of people that migrate to Canada and, are consider themselves working artists? I'm not sure if that's just in Quebec. There's a different perspective that maybe everyone who's coming here is coming to work in the sciences, because those are what's really kind of, or technical fields, because that's where so much demand is right now in the labor force.
Yeah, I think, I mean, people come from very, very many different backgrounds and experiences. It really depends sort of the streams that you're applying through as well, whether you're, you know, you have temporary foreign worker streams, right. You have skilled worker and so on and so forth. And I think as well, you come in as a refugee to Canada. So that's a totally different system and process. I think the really interesting thing about newcomers specifically from the Global South is that a lot of the newcomers that come to Canada have these very specific skills and are often white collar workers and come to Canada are not able to actually gain employment in their original field of work. They're very, very qualified people that, you know, are engineers and doctors and lawyers in their parts of the world. And they come to Canada and their degrees or their certifications aren't really recognized. And so a perception might be that folks that come are not as skilled, but the reality is very, very different. And I think that came to the front during this pandemic, specifically when we realized we needed more frontline workers and we needed doctors and nurses. And we had so many folks that were, you know, that are part of the immigrant community, different communities all over Canada that had these skills, but were not actually, couldn't gain employment. And that really became a topic of conversation and it shouldn't have been, you know, that's not really fair to people that have actually gained those qualifications elsewhere.
I am speaking with Mariam Zaidi, who is the Programs and Development Manager at Silk Road Institute. So you will be closing out, I believe, the weekend with a musical performance by emerging artists. Can you tell me what we can expect?
Yes, definitely. I think an emerging artist, perhaps in the Canadian scene, but very, very established otherwise. The musician's name is Ahmed Monica. He comes from Iraq and is also identifies as a newcomer and is a really, really talented musician in the field of jazz music and as well as other disciplines. And we're so honored and thrilled to have him sort of close the event with a performance that he'll be live streaming and speaking to our audience as well. So we really hope everyone joins us for these conversations and for the performance as well.
Mariam, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about the upcoming event and to broaden our knowledge a little bit more about the people coming to Canada, coming to Quebec to get settled here and what we can do to make them feel like they're part of the arts community.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah.
That was Mariam Zaidi of the Silk Road Institute, Canada's only Muslim theatre company. Their two-day forum kicks off this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. To sign up and learn more, check out the event, Newcomer Experiences, A Canadian Perspective, on Eventbrite or visit silkroadinstitute.ca. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight you heard Adrienne Richards in Mob at the Centaur, Yael Azoulay of La Trame de l'Agence Resonance, and Mariam Zaidi of Silk Road Institute. A very big thank you to my guests. Theaters reopen in Montreal tomorrow, and Quebec Drama Federation is holding an online forum to discuss reopening and what the one-year anniversary of the pandemic and what it means to the English theater community. They also will celebrate World Theater Day this coming Saturday. Check out quebecdrama.org for more information. Whether you're seeing a show in person or online, or if you can reach out to your favorite theater company and tell them how much you appreciate them, I hope you take a moment to celebrate World Theatre Day and the general reopening of our arts venues in Montreal. And you have until Sunday to help me and everyone else at CKUT with our funding drive. It wraps up in a few days. We are just halfway to our goal of reaching $25,000 in donations. If you select Upstage as the show you are contributing to, you also help us reach our individual show goal. Donors who commit $30 get a free Funding Drive t-shirt and other goodies. Call 514-448-4013 or visit ckut.ca to donate. You can also donate by mail. Radio CKUT 3647 University, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. Know that anything that you can contribute will be much appreciated. Catch past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under archives. Thank you to Tamara at CKUT for making sure this show gets to air, and thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah De A. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca. Until next time, stay home and stay safe.
CIBC 90.3 FM in Montreal. No boundaries. Feel alive.
March 25th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight is our second show taking place during the 2021 CKUT funding drive. This year, CKUT is looking to raise $25,000 for the station, and we're up to a total of $16,815. As you're listening to tonight's lecture on Grey Matters, please consider pledging some of your hard-earned cash to CKUT for this our annual funding drive. You can give us a call at 514-448-4013 or go online to ckut.ca/donate. Or, of course, you can drop by the station, or mail, rather, your contributions to the station at 3647 University Montreal, H3A2B3. This year, CKUT is celebrating its resilience. We've broadcast the shows for the last year. CKUT has been closed, and programmers are preparing their shows at home. Hence, the theme of this year's annual funding drive is a celebration of the importance of having resilience grassroots media. Resilient grassroots media. Of course, the funding drive has a number of practical results. It allows CKUT to provide you the best programming possible. So again, please pick up the phone and dial 514-448-4013 or visit us online at CKUT.